Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Successful Farming Podcast. I'm Jason Meeker, the host of the podcast. I'm also the executive producer of Successful Farming Television on RFD TV. On today's show, we'll be talking to Casey Birchmeyer. She has been working at Successful Farming Magazine for a little less than 4 years. She is currently the agronomy and conservation editor and wrote some interesting articles in... Well, she always writes interesting articles, but a couple that we're going to be talking about are in the mid-March and April issues of Successful Farming. We'll be talking about cover crops a little bit, and we'll talk about Palmer amaranth in CRP acres. So she's been reporting on those issues and on a whole bunch more. So we'll learn more from her when we hear from her in just a moment. Before that, I just want to remind you to get in touch with us if you hear something on the show that you like or disagree with or have a comment or question. You can reach out to me by emailing podcast@agriculture.com. You can see more about this episode and previous episodes by going to the website on agriculture.com/podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jason Meeker. So now we're going to go to the interview with Casey Birchmeyer. Joining me today on the Successful Farming Podcast is Casey Birchmeyer. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jason.
So you are the agronomy and conservation editor for Successful Farming. What exactly does that entail, and what topics do you mostly write about?
Right. So I write a lot about how farmers can increase profitability through their production practices. So I cover a lot of topics, anything from seed selection to cover crops to weed control, just a variety of things on that front. And then I also cover conservation practices. So cover crops, again, fall into that. Different tillage systems. Mm-hmm. I've also covered farmers who are putting in larger practices like saturated buffer strips and wetlands. That's why I really enjoy going out and talking with those farmers and interviewing them, because they really are sometimes taking out quite a bit of land, and they're making a long-term investment, or they're concerned about nitrates and how they might impact the environment. So that's where they're putting in these different saturated buffers and bioreactors.
So let's go back a little bit. How do you know about the stuff that you report on? Like, what's your background?
Well, I grew up on a farm in central Iowa near Maxwell. My family is a fourth generation farm. They grow corn, soybeans, and they have cattle.
Okay.
And so, it's been in my family for quite a few generations, and I have two brothers who are part of the operation now as well.
Excellent. And so then you grew up on the farm, grew up in a small rural town, that was kind of your...
Yeah, that's how I got interested in it. I was surrounded by it, and to be honest, I took it a little for granted, just mm-hmm. that everyone really appreciated agriculture. And then I went to college and realized that quite a few people are removed from the farm, and I really decided that I wanted to get into ag communications.
Okay.
And I actually graduated from Iowa State University with a degree in journalism. But I had an internship at the Iowa Soybean Association through college, and that was really great because I was working with farmers on their farm as they were doing research, and I saw just really how much they cared about getting things right, and I thought it was important to share that message and to help farmers, get the most mm-hmm. Relevant information.
Yeah. So what projects specifically did you work on with the ISA?
I was on their research team at the time, and so they worked with all sorts of different things, everything from planting rate trials to nitrogen applications. So I would work with the team, and we would write up articles. And so that's when I decided that I really liked writing for the farm industry.
For agriculture. Yeah. Great. So you, I was looking through the, what is this, the mid-March issue, and you had a really interesting story about Palmer amaranth in CRP acres. Could you kind of give us a synopsis of that story, of how you heard about it, this situation, and kind of give us a little...
Yeah, so Gil Gullickson and I were working on this mid-March issue, which is our weed guide. And so we like to just keep the farmers in the know on what they can expect with weeds. And Palmer amaranth really seems to be the thing that's on top of everyone's minds. And if you've been following the news, you'll know that they have found Palmer amaranth last year in CRP acres. And so what happened is the seed was brought in accidentally through these seed mixes, and, you know, not known to the farmers, they accidentally planted the seed. So we tried to get in touch with a farmer who had this happen, who'd go on the record and talk to us about this.
Yeah.
And just nobody wants to, and you can't really blame them. It's kind of, it's a touchy subject at the moment. So I was able to talk to one farmer who was willing to let us write about his story. He just didn't want to be named. So, and his story is, it's pretty wild. So he had a 120-acre piece of land that he wanted to enroll in CRP. And so he hired a conservationist to plant a mix, a variety of things, really. So there were a lot of grasses. He had a food plot for wildlife, and he had a waterway already in this area. And then he also had a pollinator plot. And so it turns out the pollinator plot was the culprit here.
Oh, okay.
The pollinator plot was 8 acres out of the entire 120 acres that was enrolled in the CRP. And so the company that provided the seed had to outsource it, it wasn't local seed. And so that's where it was contaminated.
Why is why are conservation areas so vulnerable to Palmer amaranth?
Well, they have, from what I understand, they have just a lot of different types of seed mixes in there. There's a lot of variety. And the Palmer amaranth seed is just tiny. You can't pick it out of these seed mixes. Right. And so even if guys are having their seed tested, the odds of pulling a sample that has that in there, it's just going to be nearly impossible.
So in this story, he talked about, the farmer talked about mowing and how that kind of made it worse because for two reasons. One is it made it harder for him to identify, and then it also spread the seed a lot more. So talk about what.
Right. So just to help take care of his CRP, part of what he was going to be doing was mowing. He didn't want it to be an eyesore for the neighbors.
Okay.
So he mowed quite a few times throughout the summer, and he'd heard a few people mention that this Palmer amaranth had been found in some CRP acres, so he was really keeping an eye out for it. And he, you know, he kept looking. He didn't see anything, and as he was mowing, and kept hearing more rumblings of it, so he started scouting a little bit closer, and he realized what he'd been doing was mowing down these Palmer amaranth plants. And instead of growing, you know, really tall like Palmer amaranth will, it branched out. And so because he mowed it multiple times, you know, it's running along horizontally.
Oh, wow. So it blends in with everything else.
Yeah, and he showed me pictures of it, and he's like, can you spot the plant here? And, you know, it took a while to see where it was. It doesn't look like what you see traditionally when you pick up, you know, an issue of Successful Farming. We're telling you how to scout for it.
Right.
It looked a little bit shorter and just wider than the traditional plant. And we include in our article a picture of what it looks like when it's been mowed off, and it's significantly different. So he walked all of those acres, hired a crew, and they cut down all of those Palmer plants, and they bagged them. And
all cut it all had to cut them all by hand?
Yes.
All 8 acres?
Oh, no.
All 120 acres?
Yeah, so the majority of the Palmer was in those 8 acres, but then he thought, oh, we're safe. It was just in that. Well, what happened is when they were seeding this, the pollinator mix had been seeded before some of the other 120 acres. So they didn't, since it's all just one big CRP area, they didn't clean out the cedar. And so that was mixed throughout the rest of the acres.
Yeah. And then mowing probably didn't help with things either.
And I don't think, fortunately, he caught it before, had gone to seed.
Okay.
And so he didn't hurt himself there. But that's one thing that he mentioned for people who didn't realize that they had it or didn't pull it. That could have been a real problem for others this year.
After a couple of years, it'd be a real nightmare. So he had to go through and cut it all by hand once he found out he had it. What should farmers and landowners be doing to keep their just scouting, or is there anything else they can do to curb the spread of Palmer amaranth, or is it just vigilance?
Right. That's a lot of it is scouting, going out there and walking. I mean, this farmer, he planted this in the beginning of May, and he was out there mowing and walking this ground significantly throughout the summer, and he still didn't notice it. So you need to, have an idea of what it looks like and realize that it looks a lot like water hemp. So you just need to really aggressively treat anything that looks like water hemp is Extension's recommendation. And when you do, see that and you can't kill it with a herbicide, do pull it and bag it and don't let it go to seed. Don't let that get spread, because then you're in trouble. I mean, on his 8 acres, he had large plastic lawn bags. He filled 20 plus bags with Palmer in those, I think, 250 plants total, just in the 8 acres.
Yeah.
And then he pulled another 50 plants throughout the rest of it. And so one thing he did was he let his neighbors know that they had issues. And I think that's important, is going to be talking to people in your area and letting them know if you unfortunately do have this weed, and making sure that they don't. And just be aware of maybe who has CRP plantings. And if they are up next to your field, you share a fence line, just maybe do a little bit extra scouting.
Yeah. So one of the things you said he noticed during the summer was he noticed unusual weeds that he hadn't seen for a while. What's the significance of that?
Right. Well, that's because this ground, I mean, it had been corn, soybean ground, and they were taking it out of production and putting it into the CRP program. And so he just had a lot of weeds that were starting to come up that hadn't had a chance before. It was no-till ground. And so he just was dealing with a really old seed bank.
Okay. You think those came in the seed mix from that spring, or they were there?
They were already there.
Okay.
Yeah.
It just took them that long to kind of show up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I know there's a lot more in this mid-March issue about Palmer amaranth, and I'm hoping to get Gil in here for a future podcast to talk more about it, 'cause it's really a big issue. And,
Gil did a really, a couple of in-depth stories on Palmer in there. It's pretty interesting. It's something you definitely want to get ahead of and stay ahead of.
Yeah. All right. So then in the April issue, you've got a good fact or fiction about cover crops and kind of debunking some myths, I think, is kind of part of it, but also finding out if some of the advertised benefits of cover crops are actual benefits in practice. So what was the kind of the situation behind this, some of the research that went into this
So as people are used to, cover crops are really gaining in popularity. Mm-hmm. I go to a lot of different meetings and talk to a lot of farmers, and everybody wants to learn more about cover crops. But anywhere I go, I hear people say, oh, well, is that going to hurt my corn yields? Or I'm afraid it's going to steal water that should be available to my crop. And, oh, I don't know if I want to do it because of this. And so with all of that interest, there's a lot more research that's going on in regards to cover crops. And so I reached out to some extension folks, some researcher scientists, to see what the latest research on cover crops really is. And we just wanted to address some of the kind of myths that are mm-hmm. out there and let people know if that's a concern or not. And one thing that I think is great for farmers is that Extension is working to come up with recommendations for farmers. So even if some of those, let's say, myths are actually have some truth behind them, they have recommendations for how farmers can deal with those.
Okay. So you have several statements and then determining whether they're fact or fiction. So what are some of the myths about cover crops? Some things that people have wrong.
Well, one of the things is whether or not cover crops are going to steal water from remove water, and your crop's not going to have access to that. And that's actually not really true, because soils can hold an additional 1/3 inch of water than soils that don't have cover crops on
really?
Them.
Really? Okay. So it's actually, your soil can retain even more water if
yes.
cover crops are done correctly.
Yes.
We did a whole feature on the machinery, back when it was called the Machinery Show, on the TV show about cover crops. And if they're done wrong, you can really, mm-hmm. really mess up your,
right.
mess up your soil, mess up your crops for the next season. So I mean, make sure we...
Right.
We state
yeah, no,
if it's done correctly, and then these benefits are
That's available. Really true, and that's what Extension's trying to work on and come up with recommendations for how you can go in and you can, you know, plant these, terminate these, and not have it impact your crop, because there absolutely are opportunities to not do things correctly and have it ding yields.
What about soybean cyst nematodes? Can cover crops host...
Yeah, so one of the things that you hear is that, oh, well, I'm worried that cover crops are going to be a host to SCN. And that is actually, that's not true. The research shows that there's virtually no possibility that cover crops will be a host for SCN. And they tested at Iowa State a variety of different cover crops, and they feel pretty confident in that.
So pressures on soybean can be mitigated using cover crops. But what about in corn? You mentioned winter rye could potentially be a problem in corn.
Right. So people are concerned that if you plant winter rye before corn, that it's going to ding yields. And there are a couple of different reasons why that could be. And so when we were working on this article and I was talking to researchers and scientists, you know, there are a couple different things and theories that exist for yield loss scenarios. So one could just be poor planter performance because of the extra residue.
Okay.
Others could be you have a reduced early season nitrogen availability, and others... things could be water availability, which
okay.
we also address in this issue. But these researchers at Iowa State wanted to look and see if stand loss was caused because of soil-borne pathogens.
Okay.
And those can cause seedling diseases. So they set up a trial to see if the winter rye then would... have these pathogens that would infect the corn.
Okay.
So the main ones that they were looking at were Pythium and Fusarium. And so Pythium was the culprit that they're most concerned about. And just because after rye, the carpet of residue makes the soils wetter and cooler. And so that in itself favors Pythium over Fusarium.
Okay.
So they looked at these different roots to see if the pathogens could infect the corn plants. And they set up cover crop termination trials.
Okay.
To see how they impacted the planting date.
Okay.
If you terminate that cover crop 10 to 14 days before planting, you're going to minimize that risk and you're not going to have an issue. So really, it's a lot more on when that cover crop is terminated and when you plant. So it's something that you can really...
Something you can avoid if you plan ahead.
Yes.
Again, what we were saying before about if cover crops are done right, you can really mitigate some of these potential problems as well as kind of cash in, so to speak, on the benefits as well. But
and
knowing when to terminate.
Yeah, and just as a general rule, when in doubt, they've just found when you terminate the cover crop when it's a little bit smaller and then you wait a little bit longer until the soils are warmer, you're really going to reduce the risks of that.
So the risk is that pathogens,
right? So
can
they
infect
both. They were worried that pathogens that can impact the winter rye would then potentially have an effect on the corn plants, mm-hmm. and so just leaving that window there helps your corn plant.
So the winter rye in corn is true, but can be mitigated.
Mm-hmm.
What about soil temperature?
So with soil temperature, it is true that your soils can be a little bit cooler when you plant a cover crop. But what they found is that if you're already in a no-till system and you're just adding cover crops, the temperatures are only going to be slightly cooler than what they already are. So if you're doing tillage, you'll notice a difference.
Okay.
But one of the researchers found that when you look at soil temperature at seed depth in a field that's been tilled and has no residue versus no-till field, at night the tilled field gets cooler than no-till. So it's only during the periods of intense solar radiation that there's a temperature difference.
Okay. So the cover crop has a pretty similar effect on the soil as like a moderate amount of residue would. Okay, that's interesting to know that, because I've seen some pictures on social media of guys side by side, one field with cover crop, one field without, and sticking a thermometer in each field and pretty significant difference. But I can't remember now if that was a no-till, if the non-cover crop field was a no-till, or if he had some, I can't remember off the top of my head. But
well, and one of the ways you can handle this is if you're concerned about the soil temperature is to clear the residue away from the seed row, and that's going to take care of the problem.
Okay. All right. Okay, so then the final category of some of these facts or fiction are whether or not some of the stated benefits of cover crops are actual benefits. So the suppression of soybean diseases. We kind of talked about soybean cyst nematode, but what about other soybean diseases?
So this is actually, I find... one of them that's really interesting, and I'm excited to see more research, but cover crops can in fact be used as an additional tool to suppress soybean diseases.
Okay.
So the results can vary, so don't go out there and, you know, cancel some of your orders to protect your seed. Don't do that. But if you have an area where you know that you want to lower some of the disease levels and you have some root rot problems, you can go ahead and add some cover crops in there to kind of just add another tool to that toolbox.
Okay. And then what about nitrates, runoff? Is that been found to be a real benefit that cover crops can reduce?
Yeah. So as a fact, cover crops do reduce the amount of nitrate losses in tile drainage because they're usually grown in a time where we have less vegetation out there that's going to be taking them up, and it's a time where we have a lot of water moving through the soil.
Okay, great. So all in all, like we've been saying all through this discussion, if done correctly, cover crops can be very beneficial, and a lot of the risks can be managed or mitigated. It's
right. And that's the main thing. I just obviously wouldn't recommend anyone to go buy some random cover crop seed that they don't know anything about, mm-hmm. throw it out there, and then expect there to be no problems. There are definitely some potential pitfalls. So cover crops can really help farmers to reduce excess nutrients from leaving the field. They increase soil health, and then they help control erosion. So those are benefits that farmers really can enjoy from having planting cover crops. It's just some of these other things that they want to be aware of.
Great. So what's a good resource to learn more about cover crops to make sure that they can find out they're doing it correctly?
Yeah, I would maybe get in touch with your local extension, mm-hmm. see if they have research available for your area and have recommendations for you.
Find out somebody nearby that maybe tried it and what they've found to be pitfalls and what's worked and what hasn't.
A lot of times there are farmers who have been using these cover crops for 20 up to 30 years.
Wow.
And they have a lot of experience, and I've noticed they really like to share that knowledge with mm-hmm. other farmers who are interested in getting started.
Earthworms. Right before we started, you were talking about earthworms or night crawlers. What was the the statistics on that?
So an Iowa Learning Farms study showed that cover crops increase night crawler populations by 38% versus strips that don't have cover crops.
Okay. So, and that, of course, helps with compaction and
overall, I think it just shows that it helps the biology of the soil. You have healthier soil.
Healthier soil. Okay. And then, of course, all the other benefits of cover, like the radishes can really, they
have the long
roots,
tap root.
Yeah, the tap roots that really break up the compaction. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. So, what stories are you working on for future issues that we can look forward to reading in Successful Farming?
Yeah, I have a fun feature coming out in the May issue on this kind of the state of conservation and mm-hmm. erosion control and what farmers can do to get ahead of soil loss.
Okay. So what are some of the insights, spoilers you can give us?
Yeah, I'll tell you a couple of them. One thing that they can do is reduce tillage.
Okay.
And another is to plant cover crops. It's really a 1-2 punch there.
Okay. All right. So we'll look forward to reading that article in the May issue, right? May?
Yep. In the May issue, okay. It's actually going to be called Beauty and the Beast. So
Beauty
keep your eyes open for that.
Okay. We'll look for that. Well, thanks for coming in and chatting with me today, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Jason.
That's our show for this week. Thanks for listening. I appreciate Casey Birchmeyer coming in and speaking with me for a little bit about some of the topics she covers for the magazine and for the website, agriculture.com. Once again, if you have any comments or questions about this show or suggestions about future guests or topics, make sure you reach out. You send us an email, podcast@agriculture.com. You can go to the website to hear more episodes and to get more information about this episode by going to agriculture.com/podcast. And make sure you follow me on Twitter @JasonMeeker. And you can follow Casey on Twitter @ Casey Birchmeyer, and that's KaceyBirchmeyer @Casey Birchmeyer on Twitter. You can also find a link to that in the show notes at agriculture.com/podcast for today's episode. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you on another episode.